Saddle up your horses.
Well, welcome everyone to the Red Sky Radio program. Actually, it's the Robin Walter program on the Red Sky Radio Network. God bless you. Thank you for joining in this Thanksgiving holiday weekend. I know it's behind you now that you're hearing this. I do have a Thanksgiving message, however, two of them, this weekend and from last week, part one and part two of Who I Am in Christ is definitely a Thanksgiving message. If you would like to hear a Thanksgiving message, that is Sunday morning with Robin Walter. So go check that out if you don't already get it, and you will be able to hear what I felt like were two inspired messages. This one is not a Thanksgiving message. We're kind of back to life, I guess. We're back to I don't want to say the real world because it makes who I am in Christ seem unreal. That's not it at all. We're just back to kind of what we are engaged in fighting day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month. This program is entitled, Why Did We Get Mam Donnie? And next week, I'm going to deal with why Trump got the wool pulled over his eyes with Mam Donnie in the Oval Office. And it's going to be a study, I hope you're ready for it, in Islamic law, tradition, and practice, how they function. You don't want to miss it unless you want to be ignorant of Satan's devices, which we are told not to be. So, you know, why did we get Mam Donnie? Well, you know, we also, along with Mam Donnie, we also got the socialist mayor of Seattle, or was it Portland? I don't know. No difference in my mind between those two cities. They're both screwed up. They got the, and then, you got the Islamic mayor. Why do we get this guy in Dearborn, Michigan, telling the Christian man to get out of the city? Keep in mind, this is a foreign religion brought in by foreigners. That should be clue number one. So why did we get Mam Donnie? Well, in the book of Judges, interestingly, it said that at that time in Israel's history, everybody did that which was right in their own eyes. That sounds kind of familiar, right? Which led to gross immorality and sin, and for which in every single situation, God brought in a foreigner to harass and rule over Israel until it got so bad that the Jews cried out for help and God would bring them a deliverer, who is called a judge. Not a judge in the typical sense of the word, but somebody who would help deliver them from the oppression. If you look at 1 Kings 11, and I've mentioned this passage some time back dealing with the issue of secession, but in 1 Kings 11, we have, it starts out with Solomon going south. He was a great king, but he finished very, very badly. Verse 6 of chapter 11 said, starting with verse 1, it says, but King Solomon loved many strange women. And of the nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, you shall not go into them, neither shall they come into you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. But Solomon clung unto those in love. Must have been real love because he had 700 wives and 300 concubines. And it says, and his wives turned away his heart. And Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord. I'm skipping down here a little bit here. He did not go fully after the Lord as his father David did, for Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, and the hill that is before Jerusalem, and for Molech. And likewise did he for all his strange wives, which burnt incense and sacrificed unto their gods. What did they sacrifice? They sacrificed their children. That was what the god Molech demanded as a sacrifice. Or people speaking on behalf of Molech, because there is no Molech. So the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned from the Lord God of Israel, who had appeared unto him twice. Can you imagine this? This is the severity of Solomon's sin, visited twice by God. We as a nation have been visited, if you will, by the hand of God, the favor that we have had. But it goes on, verse 11, it says, "Wherefore the Lord said unto Solomon, for as much as this is done of thee, and thou hast not kept my covenant and my statutes, which I have commanded thee, I will tear the kingdom from you and will give it to thy servant." So we have Solomon teaching the nation to sin. Same thing Manasseh did later on. And it says, "And the Lord stirred up an adversary." The Lord stirred up an adversary, Hadad the Edomite. So the adversary for Israel was a foreigner, in essence a foreigner. An Edomite was not a true Hebrew. And when that didn't, not like God failed, but that didn't quite do it as far as punishment, it says down in verse 23, "Then God stirred him up another adversary, Rezin, the son of Eliada, which fled from his lord Hadadezer, the king of Zobah." Don't know where any of those places. "And he was an adversary to Israel all the days of Solomon. And he abhorred Israel, and he reigned over Syria." So he's got two foreigners coming against Israel for Israel's sins and disobedience. And who does he bring against Israel? Somebody that abhors and hates Israel. What do we have with Mamdani and the Muslims? Oh, come on. They hate Christians. They hate Jews. They accommodate us until they can shoot us. After that, it's over. And once they gain enough power, watch and see. You'll see that this is the case. And then you have this passage, which is eerie, from Jeremiah 5:15. It says, "Lo, I will bring a nation upon you from afar." How far? Well, from a house, O house of Israel, saith the Lord. But it is a mighty nation. It is an ancient nation. It's a nation whose language you don't know, nor neither could you understand what they say. They will come, and they shall eat up your harvest and thy bread, which thy sons and thy daughters should eat. But they shall eat up thy flocks and thine herds, and they shall eat up thy vines and the fig trees. They shall impoverish your fenced cities wherein you trust with the sword. And in a similar passage, it talks about the towers falling, which it blows me away. That, well, you know what, maybe I better get it. So you got a complete synopsis here. And that comes from Isaiah chapter 30, verse 25, where the Lord talks about the day of the great slaughter when the towers fall. Past maybe being prologue? I would say so. This talks about upon Israel, but it's prophetic for us. We are not in any different situation, where a foreign power comes in ways which exactly reflects what happened to Israel, to punish Israel for its sin, likewise punishing us for our sin. It comes from afar. It's a language we don't understand. How many people in this country know Arabic, besides the ones who've come here legally or illegally? Like about zilch, maybe a few in the military who had to learn it for duty in the Middle East. And what do they do here? They suck up a lot of taxpayer money. They shall, like Jeremiah 5:17, they shall eat up your harvest and your bread, which your sons and your daughters should be eating, but they're going to eat it up, and they're going to impoverish you. Well, okay, we could go on and on with it. These are foreigners that have come in, whether it's under the judges in Israel, whether it's to punish Israel in 1 Kings, whether it is, as we've read here out of Jeremiah, as it is in Leviticus chapter 18, which I have read numerous times to you from this, but we're talking about why did we get Mamdani? Why did we get essentially a foreigner from a foreign nation? Well, foreign ideology. Well, chapter 18 of Leviticus goes on to say you should not commit adultery. You should not be committing incest. Should not commit abortion, which is sending your children, offering them up to the fire to Molech. That's verse 21. You shall not commit sodomy. Having sex with the same sex, that God calls it an abomination. He says you're not supposed to lie with any beast. That's a defilement. And he goes on to say, the land will be therefore defiled. I will visit its sin upon it, and the land itself will vomit out its inhabitants. The land will spew not you out also when you defile it, as will I not spew out you also as it spewed out the nations that were before you that committed these abominations. And the Lord goes on to basically say that Israel's even worse. Why? Because they knew better. Why is it be worse for us? Because we know better. That's Leviticus 18. Nebuchadnezzar, Israel's hauled off to Babylon. By whom? A foreigner. A foreigner comes in. God has used as judgment against Israel time and time again to judge a nation for its sin. We're overrun with people coming across the southern border. You've got Mamdani. You've got the Somalians who are running Minneapolis with that mayor, Seattle or Portland. I can't remember. She's a socialist. I don't think that she's Islamic. You got the mayor in Dearborn telling the Christians, got to get out. This is our city. Demanding Sharia law. And we just sit back thinking that somehow maybe we can pretend that it'll go away. So to look at Mamdani really forces us to look at ourselves. In other words, is Mamdani's rise directly related to our meteoric fall and collapse? Well, you know, every week I try to bring you good news. Every week I have more negative news than I have good news because, in a sense, I'm still a watchman on the wall, although in this case, I think the ones we're watching against are inside the wall. Certainly inside the walls of Minneapolis, Dearborn, New York City, and coming to many cities near you. Yeah, we had some good things that have happened, but they're outweighed by the bad things. And I want to take you back to what is it that has so upset God with this country that he's allowing foreigners to come in, a language we don't understand, basically an ideology and from afar. This is not something that's just cooked up down the street. Well, it is now because you've got mosques all over the place. You got this imam this and imam that, sort of a takeoff on Haimam. But anyway, that's another story. So last week, when I ended the program, I ended you with a piece that said, this is why we have blown it. We have blown it like Israel blew it when they seemed to have had one last chance to get it right. And they didn't. Well, then they confess their sins. God would bring them some degree of restoration. God did bring them back from Babylon to Israel. And he's bringing them back to Israel from a lot of places today, like New York City. We'll get to that. But what I said last week was we blew what might be our last chance. The worst decision that has not been corrected judicially in this country is a queer marriage decision. Redefining marriage. Calling that which is evil, good. Calling that which God said in Leviticus 18 is worthy, frankly, of death. Yeah. Tough words, huh? Well, those are God's words. The Supreme Court, with a 6-3 conservative majority, declined to hear a case that would have allowed them to overthrow the queer marriage ruling. In other words, the conservative majority, several key ones appointed by Trump, are the ones who have now let stand queer marriage as the law of the land. Now, I'm going to read you something. This may shock you. Maybe not. We will see. If I could go back just a little bit, we have a fellow by the name of Stephen Warren, who is a queer activist, writing just a bit ago here of flagship publication called The Advocate. I'm going to read to you in its entirety an article that he entitled Warning to the Homophobes. I hope you're sitting down. Warren said, one, and I'm this, these are quotes, one, henceforth, homosexuality will be spoken of in your churches and synagogues as an honorable estate. Two, you can either let us marry people of the same sex or better yet abolish marriage altogether. Three, you'll be expected to offer ceremonies that bless our sexual arrangements. You will also instruct your people in homosexual as well as heterosexual behavior, and you will go out of your way to make certain that homosexual youths are allowed to date, attend religious functions, openly display affection, and enjoy each other's sexuality without embarrassment or guilt. Number four, if any of the older people in your midst object, you will deal with them sternly, making certain they renounce their ugly and ignorant homophobia or suffer public humiliation. Number five, you will also make certain that laws are passed forbidding discrimination against homosexuals and heavy punishments are assessed. Six, finally, we will, in all likelihood, want to expunge a number of passages from your scriptures and rewrite others, eliminating preferential treatment of marriage and using words that will allow for homosexual interpretations of scripture describing biblical lovers, such as Ruth and Boaz, or Solomon and the Queen of Sheba. A warning, though, to you, if all these things do not come to pass quickly, we will subject Orthodox Jews and Christians to the most sustained hatred and vilification in recent memory. We have captured the liberal establishment and the press. We have already beaten you on a number of battlefields. You have neither the faith nor the strength to fight us, so you might as well surrender now. Okay, you got it? When was this written? When was 1987? 38 years ago was when this was written. Now go back through the list. This is just things they're going to say are going to happen. Henceforth, homosexuality will be spoken of in your churches, synagogues, as an honorable state, happening all over the place. Two, you can either let us marry the same sex or better yet, abolish marriage. Well, we didn't abolish marriage, but we got the Obergefell decision, which now has not been reversed when a conservative Supreme Court had every opportunity to do so. Number three, you expected to offer ceremonies that bless our sexual arrangements. I can go right on down the line. There are six things here. They've all been fulfilled. All of them. Every single one of them. Yeah, there's Bibles are being written. They're having queer Bibles written. And they're taking out the things or giving footnote interpretations that, oh, this is just, this is raw, uncommitted sex. This is sex that is not in love. This is just, yeah, it's uncommitted. They're just doing that. But for committed lovers, this doesn't apply to that. That's interesting. God didn't give that exception. Sodomites, he said to execute them. I'm just taking what God said on the basis of two, if not three, witnesses, right? That's what it says. So go get mad at God. Don't get mad at me. I'm only the messenger. Interestingly, he had six here. The number of man is six. The number of God, the whole number, is seven. It's why the rainbow actually has seven colors, but the fag flag only has six. Did you know that? They don't even have the rainbow correct. They stop at six colors because that's the color of fallen man. Goodness sakes, Antichrist is 666. That should tell you something right there. So all of this is happening or has happened. We continue to go down this. And now we have all of these denominations that are calling transgenderism holy. You see, if you don't stop the abortion, then at up to the first, what, they said 3 months, the first trimester, then it went to the second and then the third trimester. So there's a lot of states now you can slaughter the children on the birthing stools. Where does that go? It goes to queer marriage, queer adoption, but that doesn't get stopped. So where does it go? It keeps moving on. So now it goes to transgenderism. And Thomas Crooks, I might add, they didn't want to admit this, came out. This guy is a flaming furry. Absolutely is a furry. We got more criminal trannies because they're totally screwed up than you can possibly imagine. But it's a logical extension of sin that doesn't get stopped or dealt with. And we are inviting it. Okay, so one of those things that was written back in 1987 was about the churches receiving this and solemnizing it, advocating for it. There are churches I go by that got the queer flag flying out front here in Arizona, Michigan, California. Doesn't matter where I go. I see it everywhere. Nobody dares to speak up against it. Does anybody have a poster that says burn the fag flag? Well, no, they have burn other flags, not that one. So here's a group that says, during a time when our country is placing their lives under increasingly serious threat, there's a disgraceful misconception that all people of faith do not affirm the full spectrum of gender. A great many of us do. So this is a statement issued under the signatures of the Episcopal Church, the Presbyterian Church USA, the United Church of Christ. Of course, then you've got the typical losers, Unitarian Universalist Association and the Union for Reformed Judaism. And then a group of Quakers have gone queer. A group of Mennonites have gone queer marriage. They didn't happen to sign this, but they support it. More and more denominations. So this is a piece done by the Christian Post. I will tell you, if you read anything by the Post, it's compost. Bury it. It's crap. It's garbage. It should be in the trash. Burn it. Throw it in your mulch pile. But they came out with a statement declaring transgenderism as holy. Just as a rebuke to the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. But as this writer pointed out, this is not a rebuke of the Catholics or their bishops. This is a rebuke of God himself. That they would support this ideology that God absolutely condemns without equivocation, and then contend that these are mistakes in gender assignment, but human physicians can offer corrections for these mistakes. Remember that. Human physicians can offer corrections for those mistakes that God has made. So we're starting out with the premise that God makes mistakes. Nobody starts out tranny anymore. They start out queer. There is no queer gene. Totally debunked. Not needed. Turned out to not be necessary because they wormed their way into all parts of society without needing that lie. So this goes on to say, this is a landmark comment proclaiming that transgender, intersex, and non-binary people are worthy of love, support, and protection. Well, don't twist that too much. Signers included, which I read them, and this is a much longer list, which I'm going to skip. But it says, quote, "Let it be known instead that our beloveds are created in the image of God, holy and whole." No, we aren't created holy. We are sinners from birth. Otherwise, Jesus' sacrifice was useless. It doesn't mean anything. We aren't whole. We are corrupt and we are sinful from day one. And when they go on, how can something be holy that God requires and says should be punishable by death, such as the practice of sodomy? And what does it mean to be created in the image of God? You see, what they're actually saying is that God has a part of him that's queer, that he's a tranny, that he's intersex, that he's non-binary, that these attributes of a person at some course in their life reflect something that reflects the image of God. The image of God is a reference to the Trinity spoken of in Genesis, of which these denominations don't know jack, squat, crap, diddly, and relates to the Spirit, the flesh, and the soul. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. That's what it relates to. I mean, if you look at the passage that I read out of Leviticus, I mean, sodomy, punishment's death. Adultery, the punishment was death. Bestiality, death. Incest, death. Go right on down the line. Now, what's kind of interesting here, well, I've talked about God bringing in foreigners to judge us. What he's doing is bringing in foreigners who have a false religion, and yet in that false religion, actually in some areas of the law, are far superior in the Sharia law than the U.S. law. Because they're not into adultery, they're not into sodomy, they're not into bestiality, I tell you. They're not into incest. They all get waxed and axed if they get caught. So this Christian Post says that too many entrusted people with positions of power are demonizing transgender people, blaming them for acts of violence, and criminalizing their very right to exist. Well, that's obviously not true. Or to occupy space in our common life. The fear that many transgender children, their families, or loved ones experience is unacceptable. The drive to limit the ways that trannies, transgender, intersex, non-binary people authentically live their lives by limiting the medical care they receive, ignoring and sometimes provoking acts of violence against them, preventing them from traveling freely, or keeping them from participating in public activities is a betrayal of our deeply held values as people of faith. Yeah, well, what faith is that? They wanted to say, our scriptures vary, but they share a common conviction. What scriptures vary? What, you don't like the one that we've used for hundreds of years, so that's why you've got to, this is one of the other items that I read from 1987. You got to go change the scriptures you don't like to fit your sin? Of course, that's exactly what they're saying. So our scriptures vary, but they share a common conviction. We make justice our aim. No, justice is something you receive because of sin and wrong. But I said, make justice our aim to give voice to those who are silenced, our shared values held across many faiths. The Christian Post went on to conclude, the statement is to suggest here that opposing transgenderism is sinful. In other words, being a tranny isn't a sin. Opposing transgenderism is a sin. Does this start to see, understand why we got Ma'am Donnie? More when we come back. You don't want to go away. I'm just getting rolling. See you in a minute.
The Robin Walter Show is a listener-supported program. Your contribution goes to help as many people as possible to hear that the Word of God has answers to help you survive and even thrive in the dark days ahead in this country. We pledge to bring you the critical information you need to make informed decisions in this age where big tech and big media have conspired to rid our country of everything Christian. Please send your support to Red Sky Radio, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. That's Red Sky Radio, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. Thank you.
She can't so walk in the dark. Just a walking bird dog.
Okay, so why did I play that song? Because the first one's the intro to a marriage scene with a bride coming down the aisle. It's a stretch, I know, but I did it in honor of heterosexual marriage. Okay? Contrary to everything we've had to wade through the last 20 minutes here. Okay, so going back to this article a little bit, just as a reference before I launch into the next one, which will not surprise you, but I can almost guarantee you, you do not know about it. And that is, they had said that denying this care to tranny wannabes and so forth, it's cruel, it's unfair, this gender-affirming care, oh, blah, blah, blah. We've all heard this before, but that the cruel ones and why it's sinful, and it is a sin to not support transgenderism. Why is that? Well, let's see the facts. Here are the facts. There's an organization that has spoken quite openly about the tranny ideology. It's pushed by, you know, Democrats, basically all of them, other left-wing weenies in this country, including Joe Biden. What a morally moribund moron. That just came to me. I think that fits. But the bottom line of this, as written by this company or outfit called statsforgender.org, statsforgender.org says, is that to go trans is to go stupid. And I want to read this from piece from them via WorldNet Daily. Like I said, if somebody else can say it better, I quote them and give them all the credit as I should. Quote, the warning comes from a group called statsforgender.org, which confirms it uses statistics from sources selected for their reliability. We've mostly used peer-reviewed papers. However, we occasionally refer to government commission studies, authoritative bodies, and their submissions to governmental commissions, published books, and doctoral theses. In a few cases, we provide references for the purpose of debunking unreliable data. As this is an amazing and emerging field of research, information on this page may develop over time, for the statistics for transgender population are difficult to quantify as different definitions are used to describe the term transgender. But our focus is to underpin the statements we provide with sound research. For we know that these statements cannot comprehensively cover every single topic. But this initiative is intended to bring much needed clarity to this area of study. One of our cited sources confirmed that girls treated with puberty blockers for central precocious puberty showed that their IQ fell by 8 points. 8-point drop in IQ for prepubescent girls getting gender blockers, puberty blockers. The average fell from 102, which is a 55th percentile, to 94, which is the 34th percentile. Two patients they studied were even held back a year as the results of the mental complications arising from the use of puberty blockers. In another study of 30 children experiencing early puberty and treated with puberty blockers, IQ fell by 7 points. And it goes on to say, that, but the injury isn't limited to just girls. A case study of male patients whose puberty was blocked at age 11 showed a decline in several measurements of intelligence over the following 3 years, including a decline of 10 points in a global IQ and 15 points in verbal comprehension. The organization reported that comprehension showed a continuous decline. Other measurements showed some improvement after the initial decline, fairly stated, but never recovered to the baseline level. The processing speed index scores initially improved, but then fell below the baseline, or where they would have started. And a further quote here. Many parents of gender-questioning children are presented with statistics that make transitioning seem ideal, while portraying any more cautious approach as abusive or dangerous. When children request puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones, parents often find themselves diving into scientific research trying to distinguish fact from fiction. Teachers, journalists, politicians, and other decision-makers are frequently confronted with data that suggests that there is only one viable option. However, many remain skeptical of the rapid push towards transition. They reflect on individuals they know who were gender nonconforming in their youth and wonder what might have happened if they had grown up in today's environment, where gender expression is so heavily emphasized. The lack of a single user-friendly resource for reliable gender statistics has been a challenge for both parents and professionals. That's why GenSpect created Stats for Gender. We believe the public deserves access to reliable data organized intuitively and presented in clear, jargon-free language. Our goal is to provide those questioning their gender with full access to the facts while also helping their families, friends, and loved ones to see the bigger picture. This is incredible, but I want to conclude with this paragraph. It especially focuses on girls. Not that the guys, as we talked about, the guys are impacted too here. The organization cites revealing studies that puberty blockers may impair brain development, sometimes irrevocably, as well as one study that nearly one-third, 31% of women taking puberty blockers reported mild memory problems. 25% reported moderate memory problems, and 19% had marked or significant memory problems. It's 1 out of 5 from taking puberty blockers. You see, I guess what strikes me in this is, you know, God lays out some laws, and if we just believe God, we wouldn't have to figure out, well, what are the consequences if I disobey? Well, some of them we know. Certain crimes you commit, you end up jailed or executed. Some of them we don't. We don't actually enforce. Laws against bestiality and incest and queer sex now has gotten the green light, and that's why we got the trannyism. It's just moved on to another new level of debauchery. But God doesn't have it laid out in the Word that says, if you mess with a kid's natural development. These are a few things. See the footnotes, people. This is a few of the things that could happen. The girls are going to have a significant number of girls, more than boys, for taking puberty blockers, are going to have memory problems, so you've abused these children. Now, we have an overall passage that covers this kind of stuff where God said in Matthew that, you know, it's better to have a millstone tied around your neck and be cast into the sea than to lead one of these little ones astray. But God doesn't break it down, so we have to find out through the sinful process the horrific consequences of violating God's word, doing nothing about it, and then that becomes the baseline for further moral degradation of our society and our country. So, where are we? We continue to go down a rat hole faster than you can possibly imagine. This is why we've got Mam Dhani. I mean, yes, you've got the horrific teaching in the so-called public schools. They're so focused on education, they should just be called, not public, call them pubic schools. They're so focused on that. It's ridiculous. Everybody trying to get younger people to commit more sin than they did so they feel a bit better about the sin that the teachers have committed, right? Going around, kind of like going around the warning about the Pharisees go around the world trying to proselytize people to be become twice a child of hell that the Pharisee is. Same concept. To feel better about their sin is to cause other people to commit it and, yay, even do worse so they feel like they're morally superior. That is what is happening. God has put up for a long time with all of this stuff. Is Trump helping? Kind of. But keep in mind, Trump's speech from Mar-a-Lago, he said he's the most gay supportive president there's ever been. That's what he said. So he has some really, he's got some blind spots, and I don't know, it would seem that he would know better, and I don't want the excuse, well, I was raised in New York City. I don't want being raised in New York City to be the excuse for every conceivable sin in the world and one's acceptance of it. I mean, doesn't New York City have churches? Don't they have synagogues? Oh, yeah, that's right. The ones that the Muslims gathered around screaming global intifada around, and which, of course, means death and destruction to all Jews in the nation of Israel, which we're putting up with, and of which now is causing Jews to want to leave the United States and go to Israel. I get it. But you see, every push there is, all this push of socialism, which seems to just nicely accommodate the Muslims, they'll push anything that gets them in power. And when they're in power, they become the jihadists we know them to be through all the other parts of the world. Absolutely. And so we get the government we deserve. So we have a House that passes a resolution denouncing the horrors of socialism. The House passed it. How many voted against denouncing socialism? How many voted against denouncing socialism? 131 Democrats. Now keep in mind, Gavin Newsom and others want to skew that number and take over Congress. It only takes, what, I think 217 or 219 to form a majority, or 220. It'd be more than that because there's 450 House members. So a little over 226, I guess, would be the majority to form policy. At 226, they're more than halfway there already to those who refuse to denounce socialism. And does it have its impact? Absolutely it does. All over, we are seeing it. This is part of a judgment, folks. I hope you pass on this program to others. I really do. I feel like it's one of the most important programs that I've ever done. I may be preaching the choir, but I'm bringing out facts you would not find otherwise, except for a crazy diligent search that I do, and I'm not lifting myself up. This is my role. I ought to be doing it. It's my obligation. But take the simple act of lighting a Christmas tree. Just a few nights ago, in Concord, North Carolina. So we end up with how many people get shot at a Christmas tree lighting here. 4 people were injured, and then maybe more. I think it's an undetermined amount, 4 for sure. And they say, well, we don't really know why somebody hates Christmas. Well, all right, let's try the names of the two adults that have been arrested. The two minors, we don't get their names. The two that got arrested are this is in Concord, North Carolina. Nazir Ahmed Bostic and Kevian Rashond Bostic. Okay. Do we want a profile? Have at it. You got it. Profile. All those that are screaming for Palestinian whatever, anti-Jewish rhetoric around the synagogue in New York the other night. I mean, Jews fleeing the United States. Now, what I find intriguing about this is that probably 3 months ago, I did a program, which some people just don't understand because they don't get it, but why the United States will become Islamic is because it states in several places that basically all the nations of the earth are going to turn against Israel. Because God's not going to share his glory with a nation. There's no shelf space for God and a nation in salvaging and saving the Jewish nation. None whatsoever. And I said that the anti-Semitism in this country will continue to increase. And why? Because it will, in fulfillment of multiple prophetic statements, it will fulfill those prophecies of returning Jews to Israel. They're not all there yet. A lot came after World War II. Some have emigrated from other countries and immigrated into Israel. Some from Africa, Russia, increasingly Europe, as the Jew haters become more vocal and increasing in number. As the Jew haters in this country become increasingly vocal and in number, all of which, as I've said before, every Jew hater in Congress is a Democrat, you're going to have more leave. So here's your situation. We have Jews emigrating and Muslims multiplying like rabbits. I mean, through procreation and through immigration, legal and illegal. So this would have been unheard of just a few years ago. So the mob attacks the synagogue, yet it shocks residents. Are they concerned? Well, yeah, and they should have been. I don't know why it's taken them so long to catch on, why it took them so long to catch on with Hitler. But there's this increased hostility. They're contemplating leaving New York for Israel to secure their safety and religious freedom. This is of God. He is allowing it. But he's allowing it by judging us through the influence of foreigners, their foreign religions and foreign ideologies, which we have sometimes invited or simply got stupid and allowed into this country. Then Zohran Mamdani, however you want to say it. So he issues a public statement warning that Jews, his words, leaving New York for Israel could be in violation of international law. Now, understand a couple of things with this ridiculous, incredible statement. Number one, we aren't controlled by international law, Zohran. Who gives a rat's rear end if it's a violation of international law? International law is not our law. We don't subscribe to it. But this is what foreigners do. They bring their ideologies, their religions into this country to compromise and, frankly, pollute our culture. And one of the ways they do it, just one of them, is in bringing their laws. They'll bring international law, which has no application here. You want to apply international law, go back to Uganda or wherever the heck you want to go back to, Zohran. That's point number one. Point number two is arguably more significant. What he's saying that Jews fleeing New York for Israel could be a violation of international law. What is he really saying? He's saying you could be violating laws. You could be a criminal for what? Depriving us Muslims of the opportunity to kill you, harass you, sue you, beat you up, have another Kristallnacht in New York City? Why would he care what's a violation of a law that doesn't apply to us, and how would it ever violate a law to flee to a place of safety? It's what I'm going to do if it no longer can, if it no longer felt safe in Arizona, I'll find some place that I can speak and have a gun. Self-defense. Right now, we are to the Second Amendment of the country, not to the Second Amendment of individuals. The right of self-defense for our country. I mean, why should any American be threatened for seeking safety? Or, as one says here, exercising a fundamental right to emigrate, especially in the wake of targeted violence. Unbelievable that this guy has the audacity to say that. Oh, boy. I mean, and where this is going is obvious. These are precedents being set on a daily basis where our law-abiding Americans are intimidated or penalized for defending themselves, or in this particular case, seeking refuge from persecution. You see, what Mamdani is either really stupid or he's as clever as the devil himself, is saying, we are fine accepting all of these refugees into the United States for asylum. He said that. Let them all in for asylum, wherever they're coming from. But damn you, Jews, if you seek asylum in another country, we're going to haul your petard up, hoist you up on the petard, I think is the way that saying goes, because you're fleeing religious persecution. Religious persecution and asylum, it applies for everybody out there coming to the United States, but it doesn't apply to you Zionists trying to flee me and my Muslim brothers who want to have the right to do stuff to you. So get your butt back in here, keep paying taxes, and let us harass you. Isn't it amazing that queers get all the kinds of protection, but now Jews don't? Wow. And so back to these, the New York leaders are condemning the Intifada chants. And what is Intifada? What is it? The term means, essentially, it's a call to violence against Jews. Violence. Don't give me that crap, all of that. Well, it's just words. No, it's calling for violence and for the death of Israel's defense forces. So they're outside the synagogue chanting, quote, no settlers on stolen land, even though the Muslims stole Israel from the Jews, and we don't want no Zionists here. I think I'm going to have a t-shirt printed up. Say it often, say it loud. I'm a Zionist and I'm proud. Something like that. This is unbelievable. But what do we have? You now have the basis for next week's program. You're going to have pretty much the whole hour on a teaching of how Trump got suckered by Mamdani specifically and Muslims generally, and why we as a nation are either too uneducated or educated but somehow still stupid to accept the byline of George Bush number 2, that Islam is a religion of peace. It is not. It's a religion of conquest. I have read the Quran, and I'm not interested in taking any flack from anybody on my email, though you can write me, redskyradio777@gmail.com. You want to take issue with these comments, you can do so after you promise me that you've read the entirety of the Quran. And if you haven't, zip it up. You're speaking from a position of ignorance, maybe abysmal ignorance. But I'm not mad at you. I didn't know this stuff till I started reading about it, till I started studying it. Next week is going to blow you away, if this already hasn't. But now you know why we got Mamdani. It's after years and decades, actually, of continuous, unrepentant sin, pushing the demonic envelope farther and farther in this country, where the sins of yesterday, which were terrible yesterday, seem okay to now to a lot of people, and the push for further decadence goes deeper and deeper. God will not always strive with man. He didn't strive with Israel. He's not going to strive with us. This is all a warning. And I can't give you some of the solution, actually, until we conclude this study next week. You don't want to miss it. In the meantime, this command always stays. Sit tall in the saddle, America. And remember, you ride for the brand of Jesus Christ, no matter what happens. See you next week. God bless you all.